All right, let's dive into the Song of Songs.
Oh, yeah, this is a good one.
I know a lot of you have probably wondered about this book of the Bible, and it's going to be really interesting to look at it with Dr. Lloyd Carr's work. He had a whole lecture series on the Song of Songs.
Oh, nice.
Which is great because, I mean, it's a pretty puzzling book, right?
Sure.
Like, is it just love poems all thrown together?
Right.
Or is there actually like a deeper message? And, you know, was it really King Solomon who wrote it?
Mm.
What's the deal with all those warnings about not stirring up love before the time?
Yeah, all great questions. And Dr. Carr gets right into all that stuff in his lectures.
Awesome. One of the things that's always kind of confused me is the whole structure of the book.
Uh-huh.
It just feels like kind of random verses, you know? Like, is there a plan or is it just like ancient love poems just kind of slapped together?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of scholars think that it is just like a random collection.
Oh, really?
Just kind of like an anthology of like the greatest hits of ancient love poems.
Huh. Interesting.
But Dr. Carr, he's got a different take. He says, like, no way. It's way too intentional. There are too many, like, connections and recurring themes for it to be random. He thinks there's, like, a hidden structure to the whole thing.
Oh, so he's saying there's a method to the madness.
Yeah, exactly. Like a secret code that unlocks the real meaning.
Okay, so if it's not random, what does he think the structure is?
He thinks it's based on something called a chiastic structure.
A what?
Chiastic. So think of it like a sandwich, right?
Okay.
You've got the top piece of bread and the bottom piece of bread. They're the same.
Right.
Well, in a chiasm, the beginning and the end of the book mirror each other. And the good stuff, the key point, is right in the middle, like the filling of the sandwich.
Oh, I get it. Okay, so what's the filling in the Song of Songs?
Well, Dr. Carr says it's verses 4.16 to 5.1. That's like the pruning point for the whole book. And he divides the song into five sections, each with its own theme. Like he calls them anticipation, found, lost and found, consummation, losing and finding, and affirmation.
Wow, those sound intense. Wait, those sections aren't like in chronological order, right?
Nope. That's the thing about this chiastic structure. It's all circular. It like goes back and forth, kind of like the ups and downs of, you know, a relationship.
So like they get together, then they lift apart, then back together. Kind of like real life, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's messy, you know, but ultimately it's about a deep love and commitment.
It's making me see this book in a whole new light. Okay, so to understand Dr. Carr's approach, maybe we could look at one of these sections.
Sure, let's look at the first one, anticipation.
Okay, perfect. What's that all about?
Well, right away you see the woman longing for her lover. She wants his touch, his attention, all of it. It's pretty passionate stuff.
Sounds like the start of any good love story, right?
Right. But then it takes a turn. She starts worrying about how she looks. She talks about being sunburned from working in the vineyards and how she's afraid people will think she's a wanderer.
A wanderer. What is that supposed to mean?
Yeah, it's kind of vague. Dr. Carr thinks it might be a way of saying, like, a prostitute, actually.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that changes things a bit.
Yeah. It suggests she might not be from a, you know, super high-class background, and that makes her feel a little insecure.
That's interesting. So she's not just, like, this perfect love goddess.
Right. She's a real person with real insecurities.
So how does her lover react to all this?
Well, he's amazing. He doesn't brush off her worries. He just showers her with compliments. Like, he compares her to one of the fellow's chariot horses.
Okay.
I know it sounds weird, right? But in their culture, that was a huge compliment. He's basically saying she's strong, graceful, and valuable. He even praises her personality, you know, saying how kind and spirited she is.
It's like he's saying, you're amazing inside and out.
Totally. And it completely changes her perspective. You can almost feel her insecurities melting away. Dr. Carr says this is super important because it builds trust and acceptance between them.
Wow, that's cool. Just a few words can make such a difference.
It really shows the power of, you know, real love. But there's another layer to this anticipation section that Dr. Carr points out, and it's all about the language itself. Remember that phrase, banqueting house?
Kind of. What was that about again? Like, were they having a picnic?
Not exactly. That Hebrew word, it can mean different things, like a vineyard or a place to drink wine or even...
Well, even what?
A place for, you know, intimacy.
Oh, okay. That's definitely more suggestive than I thought.
Yeah, Dr. Carr thinks it's a deliberate double meaning. It adds a little mystery and a bit of, spice things up a bit.
Wow. So there's like hidden messages within the actual words.
Exactly. And there's another example with the word banner. It usually gets translated as like, his banner over me is love. But Dr. Carr says that in the Hebrew, it's actually a verb, an action word.
Wait, so it's not a thing, it's something he's doing.
Exactly. And based on how it's used in other ancient languages, Dr. Carr thinks that means something closer to, like, he desires me, or he gazes upon me with longing.
So it's about his act of love for her, not just some symbol.
Yeah, exactly. It shows how intensely they're drawn to each other.
This has really made me rethink the whole Song of Songs. So we've got this crazy chiastic structure and these like hidden meanings in the language. What else should we be looking out for?
Well, Dr. Carr talks about these recurring phrases and patterns throughout the book. It's like they're not accidents, they're clues.
Ooh, clues to what?
To the deeper meaning of the whole thing.
Okay, I'm in. Give me an example.
Right. One of the biggest ones is this phrase, "Do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases." It pops up over and over, always at like important moments in the story.
It sounds like a warning or some wise advice. What does Dr. Carr think it means?
He thinks it's about letting love grow naturally. Don't rush it. Don't force it.
Okay, I like that. Let it simmer.
Exactly. And it fits with that whole back and forth idea, right?
Yeah, they want to be together, but they also have to be patient.
Right. It's that tension that makes the song so interesting.
Totally. Okay, so we've got the structure, the language, the repeating prizes. But what about the characters themselves? Isn't it just two lovers?
Ah, well, it's not that simple. Figuring out who the characters are, especially the men, has been a huge debate for, like, forever.
Really? Who else could it be?
Well, there's this idea called the two-man theory. It says the song is actually about a love triangle between King Solomon, a young woman from the countryside, and, well, another guy.
Whoa, a love triangle. That's juicy. So King Solomon's trying to get with her, but she's in love with someone else.
That's the idea. But there are problems with that theory. Like, sometimes it's hard to tell who's talking. And it kind of messes with the overall message of the book.
Right, that makes sense. So what does Dr. Carr think?
He's more into the one-man theory that says there's only one dude in the whole song, the woman's one true love.
Okay, so it's just a super passionate love story between two people.
Well, it's still the Song of Songs, so it's definitely not simple. But yeah, the one-man idea makes a lot more sense.
Okay, I'm following. But who is this one man? Is he a king, a shepherd?
Good question. The book doesn't really say. Some people think he's a shepherd because of all the nature imagery. Others think he might be a king, or at least rich because of how he dresses.
He sounds mysterious. What about the woman, then? Do you know anything about her besides, you know, being from Shunem?
Well, she's often compared to these daughters of Jerusalem who are like the fancy city girls.
Ooh, so it's a city girl versus country girl thing.
Kind of, yeah. It's an interesting dynamic. But we should probably talk more about those daughters of Jerusalem later.
Definitely. They sound like they could be trouble. So those daughters of Jerusalem, they seem pretty important in all of this. Like, they could be big players in this whole love story thing, right?
Oh, yeah, they're definitely interesting. It's like you've got this Shulamite woman. She's from the countryside, right? And then these daughters of Jerusalem, they're all city girls, all sophisticated.
So are they like rivals or are they those kinds of friends, you know, the type,
mm-hmm.
who are always giving you backhanded compliments and stirring the pot?
Ha ha. Could be. I mean, some scholars see them as a negative influence, like they represent all the pressure and expectations that society puts on the woman.
So like the original Mean Girls.
Yeah, kind of. But it's not always that clear-cut. Sometimes they seem like they genuinely care about her and they give her advice. And other times it's like they're just commenting on everything, like a Greek chorus or something. They're always pointing out the woman's struggles.
It's like they're adding their two cents, but they don't really get it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because we as the readers, we see what they don't.
Yeah, we're in on the secret.
Right. And it makes you think, what's the point of having them in the story at all? What does it say about the Shulamite woman? Is she trying to fit in with them? Or is she doing her own thing, no matter what they think?
That's a good question. That's like we all deal with that, right? Trying to figure out who we are and what other people think. But before we go too far down that road, I want to go back to something you mentioned before about those patterns in the Song of Songs. Like you said, they're clues, right? To help us figure out the meaning.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, take that line, "Do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases." That's a big one. It shows up multiple times and always at like these turning points of the story.
So it's not just some random saying. It's there for a reason.
Exactly. And Dr. Carr thinks it's all about being patient with love. Don't rush it. Let it happen naturally.
Like, don't force it. Let it simmer.
Exactly. And that ties in with what we were saying before about the lovers going back and forth, right? They have this strong desire for each other, but they also know they have to wait for the right time.
Right. It's that tension between wanting it now and knowing you have to be patient. It's like a dance.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And that push and pull, that's what makes the song so powerful. You know, it's real.
Totally. And it's kind of funny, right? Because the language is so passionate and sensual, but then there's also this message of like holding back.
Yeah, it's a cool contrast. And Dr. Carr's point is that the song isn't just about like physical love. It's about all kinds of love, physical and emotional, even spiritual.
So it's deeper than just, like, the act of sex.
Right. It's about that yearning, that desire for connection, for something more. And that's what makes it so timeless, you know? It's something we all relate to.
Absolutely. But I have to ask, if it's so clearly about human love, why is it in the Bible? Or what's the message for us in the context of faith?
Good question. And Dr. Carr really challenges the traditional way of looking at it. You know, the idea that it's an allegory for God's love for his people. He's not buying it.
So he's saying it's not just a metaphor.
Nope. He thinks it's about celebrating human love, just as it is. He thinks that by putting it in the Bible, the people who put it together were saying something really powerful.
Like what?
Like, human love is sacred, it's beautiful, it's important, and it's connected to something bigger than us.
Whoa, okay, that's a big statement. So he's saying human love, with all its messiness and craziness, it's a reflection of the divine.
Exactly, and that's a pretty radical idea, especially when you think about how some religions see the world. They're all about, like, escaping the earthly stuff. But Dr. Carr says the song reminds us that the divine is right here, right now, even in our most intimate moments.
I love that, because our world tries so hard to, like, clean up love and make it perfect, but the song is saying, no, it's all good, it's a gift.
Exactly. It connects us to something bigger than ourselves. And, you know, going back to what we were saying about the daughters of Jerusalem, those connections, they're not always easy. They can be complicated, they can change.
Yeah, it's a journey, right? Not a destination.
Totally. And it's something we'll be exploring more in the next part of our deep dive, when we get back to the Shulamite woman herself, and what her journey tells us about love and desire.
So we've talked a lot about Dr. Carr's interpretation of the Song of Songs, the structure, the language, and those recurring themes. And we've touched on the mystery surrounding the characters, especially the one man. But I want to go deeper into the Shulamite woman herself. Like, who is she beyond just a name? And what can we learn from her story?
Yeah, that's a great point. She often gets kind of lost in all the talk about King Solomon or those daughters of Jerusalem. But Dr. Carr, he makes it clear that she's the heart of the whole thing. Like, her voice, her experience, that's where the real message about love and identity comes from.
Right, because she's the one who's feeling all the longing and the doubt and the passion.
Exactly. And what makes her so real is that she's not like this perfect character. She's got contradictions. She's strong, but she's also vulnerable. She's confident, but she has her insecurities too.
I can definitely relate to that. I think we all feel those things sometimes, especially when it comes to love.
Absolutely. And the Song of Songs, through her story, it's saying those contradictions are okay. They're part of what makes us human, part of what makes love so, I don't know, real and beautiful, even when it's messy.
Yeah, I get that. So besides those contradictions, what else does Dr. Carr say about her? What stands out?
Well, one thing is her connection to nature. She's always being described with images from nature, like vineyards and gardens and the wilderness.
Right, like how she was sunburned from working in the vineyards, and that told us something about her social class, right?
Yeah, but it's more than that. It's like she's connected to the earth in a deep way. It's part of who she is.
It's like how we find peace in nature, you know? Like, it grounds us, connects us to something bigger.
Exactly. And for her, that connection to nature gives her strength. It helps her deal with the craziness of love, to stay true to herself, even when society is telling her to be someone else.
She's got that, like, inner compass, right? She knows who she is.
Yeah, totally. And she doesn't try to fit in. Like, remember when the daughters of Jerusalem are giving her advice? She doesn't always listen.
She trusts her gut.
Exactly. She's not afraid to be vulnerable, to say what she wants, even if it goes against what people expect. She's, like, the ultimate example of self-acceptance, which is, like, the whole point of the Song of Songs.
That's pretty powerful. It's saying that real love starts with loving yourself, right? Accepting who you are, even the messy parts.
Totally. And because she accepts herself, she can experience love in this really deep way. She doesn't have to pretend to be someone else. She brings her whole self to the relationship.
And that's what allows their love to grow, right? Being real with each other.
Exactly. It shows how important honesty and vulnerability are in a relationship. But taking a step back, what does her story tell us about love overall? Like, what's the big takeaway from Dr. Carr's work?
Yeah, good question. What are we supposed to learn from all this?
Well, one thing is that love is a journey, not a destination. It's not about finding the perfect person or having this fairy tale romance. It's about accepting the good and the bad, the ups and downs, the whole messing reality of being with another person.
So it's not about finding the one, but about choosing to love someone even when things get tough.
Exactly. And that choice, like we see with the Shulamite woman and her lover, it takes courage and vulnerability. And it means being willing to grow and change together.
I also noticed how their love feels really balanced. Like there's this sense of equality. Neither one is trying to control the other.
That's so important. Dr. Carr talks about how the Song of Songs actually challenges traditional power dynamics. It presents a vision of love that's based on mutual respect and admiration. And he says that's just as important now as it was back then.
Definitely. I mean, there's so much pressure in relationships, so much unhealthy stuff out there. But the Song of Songs is like a breath of fresh air. It's saying that love can be freeing. It can help us become better versions of ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really the core message of the Song of Songs. It's about how powerful love is, how it can heal us, inspire us, and connect us to something greater than ourselves.
Wow, I'm so glad we did this deep dive. It's given me a whole new perspective on the Song of Songs, and it's made me think about my own relationships in a different way.
Me too. Dr. Carr's work is a great reminder that the Song of Songs isn't just some old book. It's a living, breathing testament to love and all the amazing things it can do.
Absolutely. And to everyone listening, I encourage you to go back and read the Song of Songs again, maybe with a fresh perspective. Let it speak to you, challenge you, and inspire you to embrace life in all its forms. Because at the end of the day, love is what makes life worth living.